Robert Rickover at Body Learning. And today my guest is Dr. Martin Goldman, who is a dentist of many years' experience in Berkeley, California. And Dr. Goldman is also a teacher of the Alexander Technique. We've had one interview where we've talked a little bit about some of the connections between the Alexander Technique, dentistry, TMJ. And in that interview, Dr. Goldman did give us a couple of exercises that might be helpful. This program, we're going to focus on two guided experiments that are designed to help alleviate or possibly prevent TMJ. And I will refer to Dr. Goldman as Martin. Martin, welcome to the show today.
Thank you very much, Robert. Glad to be here.
Would you like to begin by just providing our listeners a very short description of the Alexander Technique to start with, and then whatever background you want to provide for the experiments, and then we can go right into the experiments.
Sounds great. Well, you know, I'd like to begin, if I might, by relating what might be a sort of gruesome historical fact. I was reading recently that King Louis XI of France devised a particularly diabolic torture for his nemesis, Cardinal Belleau. The cardinal was forced into a cage, which restricted him from expressing his full stature in any dimension. You can just imagine the torture involved in that. I'm not suggesting that the average person would ever purposely torture himself by placing himself in any type of enforced constriction, but F.M. Alexander, who founded the Alexander Technique, noted that modern man often would pull his head down onto a compressed neck, and most importantly, this anatomic set had a vast negative impact throughout the body. If you can think of somebody riding a horse and pulling the reins on the horse back very tightly, you can kind of get the feeling of what that effect of pulling the head back and down is. And what I'd like to do today is to offer two simple guided experiments which we can illustrate how two separate sets of muscle groups impact the way the head balances atop the spine.
Okay.
Well, I'd like to start by just telling people that the lower jaw, or what's called the mandible, is controlled by the muscles of mastication and also the muscles of facial expression. When there's any kind of unnecessary or unwanted muscular contraction in either or both of these two muscle groups, the head gets pulled out of its natural balance point. And what Alexander Technique can offer us is a way to undo habitual muscular holdings by inserting one's awareness between the stimulus and the response. And by recognizing where a rest position is between two opposing sets of muscles allows one to operate in the most effective and efficient manner. The two experiments we'll go through today hopefully will give us an accurate kinesthetic sense of how the lower jaw operates, and further, how recognizing these rest positions or neutral positions when there's neither opening nor closing going on of the jaw, but a balanced poise point will allow us to loosen these reins, which might be pulling our heads down to our disadvantage. So let's begin and just jump right into experiment number one. And the purpose of this first experiment is to help us gain an appreciation of the suspensory nature of the lower jaw. I'd like to begin by stating a perhaps obvious fact that the jaw, the lower jaw, is not a part of the skull. I'll let you contemplate that for a moment. Rather than being a part of the skull, it's an appendage to the skull in much the same way that the leg is an appendage to the torso. the lower jaw is actually suspended from the skull by the muscles of mastication, and the point at which the jaw articulates with the skull is at the temporomandibular joint. If the listener would like to locate this point for themselves, you might just place your fingers in front of your ear opening and then move the lower jaw around side to side. And that object you feel moving is the lower half of the temporomandibular joint, or the upper half of the jaw, or the upper condylar knob at the top of the mandible or lower jaw. So now we know where the temporomandibular joint, let's talk about what it feels like when the muscles of mastication are at rest. The temporomandibular joint has an open feeling, and the teeth will be comfortably apart with the lips lightly touching. An analogy I like to employ to illustrate the suspensory nature of the lower jaw is if you can imagine the lower jaw being suspended by the muscles of mastication, much the same way that a marionette is suspended and controlled by its strings. There's very strong habits how we hold our jaws, and in order to take us out of our habitual holdings, I'd like to direct you into a position that perhaps will allow us to have a more pure awareness of how the jaw operates in this suspensory way. What I'm going to do is have you come first to a kneeling position, and then I'll explain what we're going to do and how we're going to visualize this, and while you're comfortably kneeling, and then I'll have you come forward onto your hands and knees. So if the listeners would like to come down to kneel down, if it's uncomfortable for you to kneel down, then you can listen to this while sitting in a chair. And while you're, if you want to have your haunches resting on your heels, if this is comfortable for you, then that might be a position that you assume. Okay, so now while you're resting on your hands and knees, I'd like to just go over a couple of anatomic points on the lower jaw. I'd like you to touch the point of your chin at the front of your lower jaw. If you can think of where Kirk Douglas had his dimple, perhaps, or I can just hear our younger people saying, now who is that? You know, so Michael Douglas also has a dimple at the front of his chin. So just touch that point. And I want you to realize that when you come to all fours, we're going to relate this point on the front of your chin to gravitational pull. And then when we come back up to the upright kneeling position, we'll again feel the pull of gravity, only now the pull will be transferred to the underside of the chin. So to define that further for you, let's first have you touch the front of your chin and then trace downwards over the prominence of the chin to come to rest on the underside of the chin. I also want you to become familiar with what are called the angles of the lower jaw. If you trace the underside of the lower jaw with your finger as it goes backwards, you'll come to a point where the jaw starts to turn to an upward direction. If you view the lower jaw from the side, you realize that it's shaped like an L, so you're coming along the bottom horizontal part of the L, and when you reach that point at the angle of your jaw, that's called the angle of the jaw. So it's beneficial for us to recognize these points, because when we rotate from all fours back up to a upright position, the gravitational pull rotates around to the underside of the front of the point of the chin and to the two angles of the jaw. So that's a lot of talking. Let's go ahead and have this experience for ourselves. What I'd like you to do, if you're in the kneeling position, is just slide your palms along your thighs, and this will guide you gently from a kneeling into a hands and knees position. If possible, you can have the palms flat on the ground, shoulder width apart. If it's uncomfortable to have your wrists extended in this manner, it's all right for you to make your hands into loose fists and rest on your knuckles. So now you're on your hands and knees, and I want you to have your face as much as possible parallel to the floor. Try not to have a big sway in your spine or be overly braced or have your back bowed, and give permission to yourself to have an easeful length of your spine extending from the top of your head all the way to your tailbone. Let's rest here for a moment to let you become acclimated and comfortable in this new position. Okay, at this time, I'd like you to visualize, if you would, a dresser tipped over so the drawers slide out towards the floor. You can let your lower jaw be one of the drawers in this forward tip piece of furniture. Again, bring your awareness to the point of your chin and allow gravity to have its due, and recognize and appreciate how the jaw is suspended. Let's just pause for a moment and let you just feel how gravity is attracting the point of your chin. Okay, at this time, with the point of the chin committed to the pull of gravity, you might gently experiment with easily moving the jaw slightly from side to side or in a circular manner. I don't want you to overdo this. I just primarily want you to let your jaw hang easily. At the count of three, I'm going to ask you to come slowly back to kneeling. Don't do it yet. But I want you to, again, recognize that as you come to upright from this all fours position, the gravitational pull is gradually being transferred from the point of your chin to the underside of the chin and to the angles of the jaw as you come back to upright. Okay, one, two, three, come back to upright. And as we're upright, you'll have a new appreciation for the feeling of openness that's now in your temporomandibular joint and in your muscles of mastication. Your jaw is probably more at rest, and I'm sure you can operate more efficiently with the temporomandibular joint open and the muscles at rest. In this position, again, your teeth are comfortably apart, and your lips can come lightly together with your tongue resting easily in the floor of the mouth. I want you to take a moment now to experience this approximation of what is your physiologic rest position of the lower jaw. Okay, one might ask, so if it feels so good for the jaw to be at rest, why are we habitually in a tense or even clenched jaw position during our daily lives? I think the answer to this might lie in the fact that our ancestors used their muscles of mastication to grab, hold, and then devour a resisting prey. These habitual reflexes are still present in our modern day life, but we don't need to hold a struggling gazelle between our teeth much these days. To recognize the rest position, when the muscles which open and close our mouths are in balance, will allow us to use just the appropriate amount of muscular action to accomplish a given task with the minimum amount of strain. Habitually and needlessly contracting the muscles of mastication stiffens our neck and pulls our head down, and this makes overall coordination so much more difficult, if not outright impossible. I'd like you to take away from this exercise the idea that a free jaw can lead to a free neck, which is essential for freedom of movement throughout our whole body. And if you'd like, return to this experiment every so often to realize that gravity can indeed be your friend.
You know, the only thing I would maybe suggest as an addition for someone that finds it difficult to do that kneeling and having their palms on the floor with a hard surface, I would think a mattress would be a good alternative.
Absolutely.
That you're not straining yourself as you do the exercise, or you're not uncomfortable if a hard surface would be tricky for you.
Well, I hope that was helpful, and
I think that was really interesting. And basically, it seems what you're after is giving people a direct experience of a freer jaw, in a unusual configuration, and then taking that back into normal sitting or standing.
Exactly right.
Very nice. Let's move on to guided experiment number two.
Great. This next experiment, I want you to gain some appreciation for what's called the mask of the muscles of facial expression. Now, this isn't my terminology. This is an official anatomic description, because the muscles of facial expression are indeed arranged in a mask-like arrangement. So let's talk about the muscles of facial expression, particularly as those that relate to the lower jaw. There are muscles of facial expression which operate around the eyes and the forehead, but today I really want to just discuss how the lower jaw is affected by the muscles of facial expression. The primary muscle of facial expression of the lower jaw is named the orbicularis oris. Now, it's not important to know the exact names of anatomic structures, but an accurate mapping of the muscles, if you can have a visual image of how these muscles are arranged, it can inform more easeful and accurate movements. So what I'd like to do is let's concentrate on the orbicularis oris and wake this particular muscle up in our senses. What I'd like you to do is to pinch your upper lip between your thumb and your forefinger, and I want you to have one finger in contact with the inside of your upper lip, pretty much far up inside the lip, and then the opposing digit on the outer surface of the lip. And I want you to just pinch gently different areas as you work your way around the circumference of your mouth, going in a circle around your upper and lower lips. And I want you to do this for 15 or 20 seconds. Just pinch your lip, your upper and lower lips, as you go around in a circle around your mouth. Okay, what you are feeling between your thumb and forefinger, contained between the mucosa of your inner lip and the skin of your outer lip, is the orbicularis oris muscle. If you were to view this muscle with the skin and mucosa stripped away, it would appear as a broad oval shape with ring after ring of muscle fibers encircling the mouth opening. Let's continue to become familiar with this ring of musculature, which defines our oral cavity, by again circling the mouth, only this time with a gentle tapping with your forefinger. Just work your way around your mouth, gently tapping around the upper lip, down to the lower lip, and then back up to the other side of the upper lip. Okay, after you've done that a little while, let's switch to just a gentle scratching movement. Again, repeating around and around the upper and lower lips. By this time, we should pretty well be able to visualize and sense this muscular band which encircles our mouth. Now I would like to have you place your thumb on the corner of your upper lip and then place your forefinger on the underside of your cheekbone. I'll go ahead and wait while you do this. So if you place your thumb at the corner of your mouth and then your forefinger on the underside of your cheekbone. I'm sorry if I was a bit muffled there. I was doing it myself, so I'll try and keep my hands away from my mouth. So realize that between your thumb and your forefinger is a strap of muscle which has its origin on the underside of the cheekbone, and then it inserts into the angle of the orbicularis oris muscle. If you would contract this particular muscle, you'd pull the corner of your lip upward toward the cheekbone. Now, I'd like you to realize that there are 9 very similar muscular straps originating from the midface on the top and from the lower jaw behind below. These 9 muscular straps insert at various points around the perimeter of the orbicularis oris. These muscle straps act together and singly to produce and animate various facial expressions. Here again, habitual needless contractions can immobilize the lower jaw and tighten the neck, thereby pulling the head down and restricting natural movement throughout the body. We can easily demonstrate this connection. What I would like you to do is hold a frown. If you do that, I think you'll be able to feel the tightness in the neck muscles at the base of the skull. Now, the answer to this, if you have a habitually dour expression, if you're holding those frown muscles in perpetual contraction, some people who subscribe to happy talk might advocate just turn your frown upside down. But you can see that if you have ever held a smile at, say, a long business cocktail party, or if you've been part of an endless receiving line at a function, you will attest that a held smile is not the answer to anything. I mean, it can make your face ache just as much. What I'd like you to realize is that there's a rest position for the muscles of facial expression, just as there's a rest position for the muscles of mastication. To better realize this, let's do another visualization. I'd like you to pull back up the image of your orbicularis oris into your mind with the 9 muscular straps attached around the periphery of this ring of muscles. Now imagine that someone has grabbed all these muscular straps from behind and is tightening your mask, so to speak. I think you can easily sense the lower jaw being immobilized and the neck tightening. What is beneficial for us to realize is that it's possible to give oneself space between the mask of facial muscles contained inside the cheeks and the lips and between the bones of your skull. And you can demonstrate this just by running your tongue around the inside of your cheeks and lips to sense the possibility of allowing space into this area. The reflexes that control the facial mask are really complex and quite primal. Indeed, the reflex controlling the muscular contraction and release involved in the suckling reflex begins as early as the 26th day in utero. The first contact for nutrition and interaction with the environment comes from the muscles controlling the band of muscles surrounding the oral cavity. Now, I'd like to do a little experiment here to allow you to experience this early and profound muscular response. What I'd like you to do is hold your little finger up. And don't use your thumb, because this can, to put your lips around your thumb can evoke all kinds of other emotions. I really want you just to hold your little finger up and have it out a little ways in front of your lips. Now, I want you to imagine that you're an infant or an animal who doesn't employ conscious thought. And I want the little finger to represent, perhaps a low-hanging, luscious, juicy berry. Or perhaps if you want to visualize yourself as a newborn infant, it could be the blanket in your crib. And I want you to let your lips move to your little finger, with your lips being the sensing device. I want you to touch your finger with your mouth, rather than have the finger touch your mouth. I want the mouth to be the sensing organ, and I want you to just gently explore the texture, the contact of your lips and your mouth to the finger. Appreciate the form of the little finger with all surfaces of your mouth. I want you to take your time, and I want you to be careful and very light with your lips. All right, now take your hand away and allow your mouth to rest. Is your facial mask perhaps more in balance and repose at this point? Has space been naturally created between your facial mask and the skull? I hope so. That's what people ordinarily report by doing this experiment. I hope these two guided experiments have given you a sense of when muscles are being held and the ease of operating from a rest position, that is, that neutral point at which we're most comfortably able to make efficient and graceful movement, the poise point. So that's it, Robert. That's two exercises that I hope will be useful to our listeners.
Very nice, very nice. I'd like to just add a little something to that second experiment, if I might.
Sure. Oh, please.
This takes us a little into the realm of Alexander technique directing. But I found, because I have a slight tendency towards a frown, and I've discovered that simply saying to myself, I'm not frowning, makes a difference. Very
yes.
Subtle, very subtle. I'm not really specifying exactly what's going to happen. I just say, I'm not frowning. That's my intention. Or another variation would be, I'm not tensing my face.
That's right. I think awareness is the very first step in the Alexander technique. And to be aware that you have a perpetually demonstrated muscular set, and then to give yourself conscious choice to undo that holding, mm-hmm. is a magnificent skill for all of us to learn. And that's what's actually involved in Alexander lessons. That's why it's hard to just talk about this in words, because an Alexander teacher will use a gentle guiding touch, and a lot of times by having someone else recognize that where you might be holding, and because often muscular holdings begin to feel normal. Now, I want to make a distinction between normal and natural, and to have a teacher actually point out how to release what is normal for you into a more natural postural or into more natural movement is one of the great benefits of having Alexander lessons.
Exactly. And really, Alexander technique teachers are specialists in this whole area of helping you identify, we could call it dysfunctional holding patterns or unnecessary muscle tension, habitual tension that gets in the way that you may not be aware of, and then helping you with strategies for releasing it, and also often actually guiding you directly into some release so that you get a sense of what release could be about. So I guess I would say that if you found these experiments useful and you want to pursue the project of releasing tension in your head, neck, face area, find an Alexander technique teacher and have some lessons. Is there anything else you'd like to add to what you've covered today?
No, I think just try it out and gain some ease. Most temporomandibular joint pain is caused from muscular holdings, and Alexander technique is a very effective way to let that go and come to a more happy position.
Excellent. So I've been talking today with Dr. Martin Goldman, who is a dentist, has been a practiced dentistry for some 30 years, and has more recently trained to become an Alexander Technique teacher. He lives in Berkeley, California. And Martin, thank you so much for being on the show today.
I really enjoyed it. Thanks for the opportunity, Robert.